Good morning, everybody.
Good
morning. Just say a bit of a prayer first and then do my second talk of the morning. Open our ears, O Lord, to hear your word and know your voice. Speak to our hearts and strengthen our wills that we may serve you today and always. Amen. Well, it's lovely to be invited here again. I do love it in this church. Your singing's brilliant. I've got a question for you. What do you want to do when you grow up? Do you know, as a kid, I wavered between being an actress, being a writer, marrying Prince Albert of Monaco because I loved the house that they lived in, or winning the pool so I didn't have to do anything. When I left school, I worked in the Crucible box office. I did hope that one day the leading lady might just fall off stage so I could have a go. Especially My Fair Lady, because I have always wanted to play Eliza Doolittle. But you know, it's never happened. But I did meet some great people on the way. Some days, when we were really busy in the box office, some of the actors, directors, other performers used to come and help out by taking calls. And other times, on a Thursday matinees, if we got a comedy play on and there was hardly any audience, I mean, 2:30 on a Thursday is not the busiest time in the theatre, I used to help out by going and sitting on the front row in the theatre and laughing really loud at the funny lines just to encourage the rest of the audience. When I was 21, I left Sheffield, went to London, where I trained to be a journalist. I hated it. And after a couple of other false starts, many of you will know that I went to work for Mother's Union during the day. In the evenings, I hung around with rock bands, hoping that one day the lead singer might just fall off stage so I could take over. It never happened. Well, charities like Mother's Union, they don't pay that well, and London rents rocketed. So a friend from the Mother's Union and I moved back up north. I looked for a job where I could meet a lot of people. I ended up in an office seeing the same three people every day. So I haven't really done any of the things that I planned, not yet. One day it still might happen. I work at the university, collecting data and writing reports. Do you know, I have never, ever met anyone who ever planned to be a university administrator. For me, it pays the bills, but analysing data would be impossible if it wasn't for the people working with me. Those who share stressful times and great times, both in and out of work. In the reading from the book of Acts today, the second reading, we heard about Paul. Now, the one thing you can say about Paul is whatever he did it with determination. If you know the earlier bit of the book of Acts, you may remember Paul had been known as Saul, and he was a devout Jew who thought his life's mission was to eradicate all those Jesus followers. They were stirring up trouble. But then he'd been struck blind by the risen Jesus appearing to him and pointing him in the opposite direction. He took that huge change in his stride, in his own determined way. He is on a mission, a journey to do the work that God has mapped out for him. Now, to help him in the first place, God sent a disciple named Ananias to introduce Paul to the other disciples. By the time we get to this bit of the story, Paul's trip to Troas, he's travelled around quite a bit. He's always had travelling companions with him. His travelling companions have changed along the way, but he's not been on his own. Other disciples have been with him. They've taught the people with him, been arrested with him, and helped him. He's encouraged them, and he said goodbye. And I'm sure they've encouraged him and said goodbye to him. He's been travelling with that whole list of people who I'm not even going to try to pronounce. Margaret did it awfully well this morning. But they've all gone ahead. But Paul has stayed behind because he's heard some word from his spies or from other people that somebody might try to get him on the boat to Syria. But he's not alone. And we know he's not alone. We know that Luke's with him because Luke was the one who wrote the book of Acts. And he's been sitting down, writing it all out. But now, Luke puts himself in the story. He says, the men waited for us, and we set sail. Luke, at this point, stops being a watcher and steps into the story. He's got all the way to chapter 20, sitting back, being in his seat, and now he stands up and says, I was there. I was one of those with Paul. I went with Paul in the name of Christ. Now, in different churches over the years, I've made tea and I've baked cakes and I've written minutes of PCC meetings, which are all things, all bits of ministry. But then, about 3.5 years ago, this voice started nagging me. It might have come from inside, it might have come from above, it just nagged me all the time and it wouldn't shut up. I'd got to 56 years old and something was telling me to stop sitting in those comfy seats and come up here and teach. I thought after 56 years, I knew what I was doing. I'd done my bit, I'd sung in the choir, I'd rung bells, I'd even taught Sunday school. And anybody that knows me knows I don't do kids. But God had other ideas for me. An American writer, Brené Brown, wrote, I think midlife is when God gently places his hands upon your shoulders, pulls you close, and whispers in your ear, I'm not screwing around. It's time. All of this pretending and performing, those coping mechanisms you've developed to protect yourself from feeling inadequate and getting hurt, has to go. Your armor is preventing you from growing into your gifts. I understand you needed these protections when you were small. I understand you believed your armor could help you secure all the things you needed to feel worthy of love and belonging, but you're still searching and you're more lost than ever. Time is short. There are unexplored adventures ahead of you. You can't live the rest of your life worried about what other people think. You were born worthy of love and belonging. Courage and daring are coursing through you. You were made to live and love with your whole heart. It's time to show up and be seen. On the School of Ministry course I've just finished, I found myself surrounded by kindred spirits, by teachers and fellow students who've encouraged me and lifted me. And I hope that I've encouraged and lifted them too. Most of all in the School of Ministry, I've learned about every person ministry. There's a time for every single person here in this church, outside this church, though some might know it yet. They've got to play a part in the story. Now, not everyone is called to stand up here and teach, but some are. Not everyone is called to sit with the sick or elderly or bereaved or to make tea or weed the church garden or twiddle the knobs on the sound system or sit on the wall at the front of church and talk to people going past about Jesus. But some are. And sometimes your calling will change depending on changes in your life or what God sees to be the needs of those surrounding you. You will need people to stand and walk with you, and people will need you to stand and walk with them. So have a think for a minute about the twists and turns in your life, the ambitions you had, the ones you still have, ones you were sad to have never achieved, and ones that you're glad that, in hindsight, never really happened. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to ask for feedback or for you to get into groups this time. Just have a couple of seconds, think about it. And I'm not being holy and meaning God was with me, because, well, God is always with you, but the people that God sent to you. Do you know, my grandfather, my mum's dad, died when she was just a baby, 28 years before I was born. But he has a part in this story. He was a Methodist, and he kept his Sunday school prizes. I want to show you one. This is one of my grandfather's Sunday school prizes. It's over 100 years old. He got it in 1913 for attendance at Sunday school. And this is part of my story. This is something that helped me with my story, because I loved to read the books that were in my grandma's house. And especially this one. This is my favourite. And do you know, I found out this morning, it's also my daughter's favourite. It's called Cripple George. It's very temperance. George was a cripple who was thrown down by his drunken father when he was a baby, and that's why he can't walk properly. But its subtitle is God Has a Plan for Every Man. And when I was 7, when I first read this, that really spoke to me. And I thought, God does have a plan. He's got a plan for me. I say, I still don't know really what it is, but God has a plan for everyone. I'm 60 years old next April. I'm pausing for the exclamation and the never, never. But you know, I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up. But I do know that God will have some plan, which may or may not agree with mine. But he doesn't just have a plan for me. It would be arrogant to think so. He has a plan for everyone around me. He's also got a plan for each one of you and for those around you. Going by previous experiences, we all know the road will not be the proverbial straight and narrow, but our mission will be for Christ, for the glory of God, and we'll not take it alone. There'll be some among you whose story is changing right now. Some who might find it particularly difficult, Some will be scared to take that step forward. Some will be feeling they're not worthy to be in that story at all. But they are. I'm sure after the service there'll be people around who you can talk to, people who will pray with you. There are people, I'll let you into a secret, there are people who are already supporting you by praying for you without you knowing it. Just use a few seconds, a few minutes, just to think where you pop up in this story, where you can join the story like Luke did. Don't stand back. Join in the story. It's definitely worth it.